You don't want vacation to end.
But with Amex Platinum, you're already planning the next one. Because you earn 5 times membership rewards points on prepaid hotels and more booked through AmexTravel.com. So every trip to the beach, and the city, and the country, and back home again, leads to another destination. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Welcome into another episode of the College Baseball Podcast. My name is Jacob Rudner alongside my co-host, Mr. Peter Flaherty. And Peter, we are 3 weeks out now. As we record this, we're actually a day less than 3 weeks out from Selection Monday, when we will find out the fate of the teams across the country, which 64 are going to compete for a national title. This past week, week 12 of the regular season, I think offered a lot of clarity in some respects as to what the postseason picture might look like. But as we're going to talk about in this episode, there were a lot of areas in which it may be clouded some of the postseason picture. So big episode coming up here. First and foremost, how are you? Any big observations from the last week that stick out to you before we get into our show?
Huge episode, huge time of year. I'd say the best time of year on the college baseball and amateur calendar is upon us. I mean, like you said, we're less than 3 weeks out from Selection Monday. We've got the draft on the horizon. There's just a whole lot of activity on the calendar. But with last week, it was very funny. We prematurely joked that 2 weeks ago now was probably going to be our toughest top 25 call. And then last week happened. We're just muddied the waters again up at the top. But as we do every week, we settled on a 25. Some people agree, some people disagree. But yeah, it was I'd say it provided clarity, and I'd also say it also provided some murkiness, at least on the tournament bubble, as we'll get into later on in the show.
Yeah, it did. And we, for the fifth time this season now, have a new number one atop the Baseball America top 25. Georgia becomes the fifth team. They join, obviously, Texas A&M, which opened the season at number one. Tennessee, which has had the longest stretch as number one at 5 weeks. Arkansas, which by default has the shortest run at number one with just 1 week, and most recently Texas. Great time of year to be a Georgia fan. I mean, this is a group that has looked excellent. I want to talk about how we arrived at the top group on our latest top 25. For those of you who have not yet seen it, which I would imagine by this point you probably have, but number one, Georgia, number two, Texas, number three, Arkansas. Notably, Texas was just swept by Arkansas. Arkansas was ranked 10th at the time, Texas number one. Georgia was promoted, like I said, up to the top spot. How did we arrive at this, Peter, is my question. And I want to know from you, what were some of your considerations? What was your preferred order? For people who don't know, we all submit a top 25 heading into our meeting on Sunday nights. And why don't you give the people a look inside your process?
Yeah, so I kind of like how we do this on a week-to-week basis, because whether or not people agree, I think it's important to kind of provide a look under the hood as to what our process is and how we arrived at, you know, Georgia 1 or why wasn't Texas there. So I will say we try and bake everything in, poll dynamics, metrics, body of work, head-to-head. And when you do that at this point in the year, you know, it gets kind of hectic. So with Georgia, and in just looking through our top four heading into last week, Texas was swept at Arkansas, and now they still lead the SEC by a full 2 games. They have one of the best records in college baseball. They have the resume of a number one team, but it not only was swept at Arkansas, I mean, it was beat really, really badly. I'd say like it was belt to, you know what, for 3 straight days in Fayetteville. So, I mean, I think that warranted at least a one spot drop, just given our track record. LSU, full disclosure, was going to slide up to number one if it had won game 3 against Texas A&M. Yep. It didn't. North Carolina had a quiet week due to final exams. They took care of business in their two midweek games, but we didn't feel like that warranted a multi-spot jump, let alone to the top spot, which is a really, really meaningful position. And so then you get to the fourth team, which was Georgia. They went 4-0. They took care of business against the solid Kennesaw State team. And then they went on the road and swept Missouri. And that's a road SEC series win, albeit against Missouri, which is an historically bad 0-24 now, or 0-21 in SEC play. But nonetheless, that's a road SEC sweep. And then some other teams just that we considered up there and threw around were Auburn, Florida State. And then we also talked about Arkansas, because as we said, they dominated Texas over the weekend. And they were sitting at number 10. They now have 40 wins. They're the only 40 win team in college baseball. And they're right in the thick of it for the SEC regular season title, and are also in the mix for a potential number one overall seed.
When I was considering the top three this week, one thing that was really important to me too was projection. We've talked about that on the podcast before. What does a team look like going forward? And I do think that in the top 25, we have been reasonably consistent in that we value what has happened a lot more than what could happen moving forward. That's just been kind of our operation and how we viewed things this season. I would still say, though, that projection matters. And with Texas, there has been a question mark about how they would fare without their ace, Jared Spencer, who's out for the rest of the season with a shoulder injury, and Max Ballou, who's arguably one of their most, if not their most, consistent hitter, who is out for still an undefined period of time after undergoing thumb surgery in early April. So to me, this past weekend was one of those signs where it's like things might not be okay without those guys who were very important to the dominance that had occurred previously. And that to me was also a limiting factor when it came to, do we keep them at one? How far do we push them down? I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt was kind of my takeaway. It seemingly was yours as well, where that's what led to them being at number two. You're allowed to have one bad weekend. And the other thing that I think is important to mention is Arkansas was 10th. So we're not talking about a team that was the number three team in the country beating the number one team in the country. That, I think, would have promoted Arkansas up to number one. Being at number 10 made it a lot more difficult to vault them all the way up as well. And I think that played a factor in how we arrived where we did.
Yeah, and I think I'll say with Texas too, and this is slightly off the point that you made, but also just relates to the grand overall theme of the conversation and projecting on teams. Like with Texas, they're 24-3 at home. They play really well at the dish. And this was their first really tough road series. And I mean, the result was the result. So that was a little bit not concerning to see, but they were handled pretty good. And again, Arkansas is a really good team. Texas is in a good spot to be a top eight national seed. So the road aspect of it probably won't be a concern until they make a run, or if they make a run to the College World Series, which then it's a neutral site. But yeah, it was their first real road test. Didn't really pass it. And then the remaining schedule isn't all that easy either. Tonight, they've got a tough midweek game at home against a really good Lamar team. Then they host Florida, which has been one of the hottest teams in the country. And then they finish out the regular season next week at Oklahoma, which is another road ranked series. So it'll be interesting to see how they fare in Norman. But I think with Texas, I'm curious what your take is. It's not like I was waiting or am waiting for the carriage to turn into a pumpkin with them, because they're far from a Cinderella team. They're unbelievably talented on both sides of the baseball, but the injuries have kind of piled up, and I've kind of marveled at the fact at just how every single hitter has seemingly stepped up at one point or another with the absence of Max Ballou. And just, I think that this weekend showed to me, like, the one concern I had about Texas is like, how are they going to fare if their pitching has a down couple of games or a down weekend? Like, are they going to be able to hit enough to still net a series win? And this is unfair to judge them on one weekend at Arkansas, but I will say that will be the one thing that I'll kind of be a little bit concerned about with the Longhorns heading into the postseason. I'm just kind of curious to see if they're going to be able to hit enough.
You know, I think that that has been a concern that we've expressed even on the show before, and I would say that it still exists. I do think that that speaks to what I talked about with the injuries right now. I think that Max Belue being out is a huge factor in that. I think that Adrian Rodriguez being limited to batting left-handed is a major factor in that. He was a much more productive player when he was able to hit the way that he always has. And this whole batting lefty against left-handers for seemingly the first time in his life is a pretty rough exchange for somebody at his age to have to go through in this conference. So, I mean, the answer is still yes, though, that it would be a concern for me, because the reality is the injuries do exist, and those are the circumstances that they're dealing with. So I will be curious to see how they continue to fare. I also, though, wouldn't put it past this team to get hot really quick at the plate and be a nuisance to a point where their pitching will be effective enough to continue to carry them at the level that we had seen previously.
Yeah, I mean, we saw exactly what we were talking about every weekend until this past weekend, where it's like, you know, right, you have guys sprinkled throughout the lineup that are coming through with big swings and game-winning and series-winning type swings. So there's no reason why they can't continue it into the postseason. I think the most important thing you got to have on your roster to sustain a run to Omaha and to be dogpiling at the end of this whole thing is pitching depth. And we've talked so many times, probably on a weekly basis, about Texas's pitching depth, so we don't need to get into it again. But it's a really talented group on the mound. Coach Max Wiener's done an outstanding job. The pieces are there. So I'm kind of curious to see how they bounce back from this one. It's their first real dud weekend. And another tough week awaits them.
One thing that I think was fair to wonder about Texas, and it ended up proving to be true, was whether or not they had the ability to remain in the number one spot for a long, sustained period, kind of like what Tennessee did. Tennessee was the number one team for 5 weeks. Like I said earlier, that's the longest of any team in the country. My question is, can Georgia do the same? Can Georgia have a Tennessee-like reign atop the poll? Or will it be much closer to the average for us, which is 3 weeks atop the poll for previous number one teams? Like I said, Arkansas, the shortest period at 1 week, Texas A&M and Texas, both 3 week stays. Where will Georgia stack up?
Yeah, I mean, it's not to discredit and devalue our number one ranking, but as we've said, it doesn't really matter when it comes to the postseason. So, I mean, there are only 2 weeks left in the regular season, and they go to Alabama, which will be a really tough series. Obviously, Alabama has had a couple of really tough, hard-fought series losses, but Alabama is still a team that we view in a really positive light. And then they close out the regular season with another difficult series against Texas A&M, a team that's, as the old adage goes, the trend is their friend, and it's very much their friend right now. So, I wouldn't say they're a lock necessarily to stay at number one, through the end of the regular season, but I mean, we've only got two series left, and I'd say at least on paper that I'd give Georgia the edge in both of them. So, I'd say that it's perhaps more likely than not. I think another team that I'm kind of looking at to make a potential move, would be Auburn or Florida State. And those are two teams that we discussed at the top on Sunday night, but those are two exceptionally talented groups. I mean, LSU, you could also throw in there. They fell from 2-6, which is probably a harsh drop, just given the nature of the series that it lost. But that's unfortunately the way of poll dynamics, unfortunately, at least for LSU fans. But long-winded answer short, I mean, I give Georgia the edge in the series in each of the next 2 weekends. So, I'd say I foresee him holding on to that number one spot until Hoover. What about you?
I will say this. I think that this Georgia team is exceptionally, I know this Georgia team is exceptionally talented offensively. I love what they're able to do at the plate. This is an explosive team that's expertly recruited via the transfer portal, via bringing guys back who were brought on last year for Wes Johnson's first season. This is a 95th-ish percentile or better offense in every single available team metric out there. So that's the first thing. I think that their pitching has shown some signs of life here. I think that this is a group that struggled for the most part, but I see Brian Curley continuing to do a very good job of handling their Friday night role. There are a couple other guys on their roster who have started to play better recently. So the answer, as well long-winded from me, is that yes, I do think that Georgia can hold on to the top spot. I think that there's a degree to which maybe this team is actually somewhat overlooked on the national landscape. I think that this is the most divided that the national polls have been so far this season on the number one team. And some polls have Georgia quite low. And so I would just say that I think that this is a team that might be slept on for its talent, but it's expertly recruited. And like you said, if you look at the remaining two series, I don't see a reason why they can't go into the SEC tournament as the number one ranked national seed, you know, at least on the polls.
And I will say, to your point about just the, I guess, Georgia being overlooked and the theme of being overlooked, Leighton Finley has also emerged, at least recently, as a really viable, I guess you could call it, number two starter for the Bulldogs. In his last four starts, which have come against Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, and then I don't want to keep beating Missouri when they're down, because, but in Mizzou, he's allowed, if my quick math is correct, he's allowed 7 earned runs across 10, 23 innings. So, I mean, it's not like video game like numbers, but those are 4 quality solid starts that have given Georgia a chance to win in each of the 4. He's seen his ERA tank by almost 2 runs. He's throwing the ball well at the perfect time of year. As you said, Brian Curley, since moving into the rotation from relief, has looked every bit of a guy who can kind of headline and anchor that rotation as they head towards the postseason. So I think Georgia's offense gets a lot of love, rightfully so, but at least recently they've shown impressive prowess on the mound and the ability to win games with its pitching, which I think heading into the postseason is such a huge key.
I mean, you could even argue at this point that Georgia right now needs more out of its offense than it does out of its pitching. Its pitching has been very good lately. Its offense has had some slower moments in the last couple of weeks. You could maybe blame some of that on Ryland Zabowski, their, you know, best offensive player this year, being out with a minor injury. I've been told that he could be back as soon as next week. We're recording this on May 6th, Tuesday, May 6th. So probably not for the penultimate weekend of the season, but maybe for the one after that. I think that this is a group that has a shot at the number one overall national seed in the NCAA tournament. Peter, what do you think?
I don't see why not. I mean, right now, number one in RPI, number 6 strength of schedule. Their non-conference RPI is also number one in the country. They've got 16 quad one and quad two wins and a dozen quad one wins alone. They've taken care of business against its lesser opponents with a perfect 23-0 record against quad three and quad four opponents. It's a resume that's really, really difficult to poke holes into. And I mean, if they win each of these last two series and if they win each of these last two series, they've probably locked it up at that point. And there's a world in which they could even split these last two series and go on a little bit of a run in Hoover and still have that number one overall national seed. So I think all things considered, from, you know, holding the top spot in the rankings and, you know, playing for a number one overall seed, I think it's all clicking at the right time for Georgia. They're in a really good spot as the postseason approaches.
One team that was in a really good spot for the postseason and is no longer in a really good spot for the postseason is UC Irvine. We've talked bullishly about the Anteaters pretty frequently, I would say almost weekly, on this podcast, and for good reason. They were in the middle of a historic season. Last week, however, that historic season seemingly crumbled a little bit. Irvine was defeated in 2 of 3 games at home against UC San Diego. Those are 2 quad four losses for a team that really can't afford them. I would say, as of us having this conversation, and after we're done with it, you and I are going to sit down and produce our next projected Field of 64, which will be live, by the way, on baseballamerica.com/college tomorrow, May 7th. I would say probably around 8 o'clock in the morning. Irvine is not a host for me anymore, Peter. This is a team that needed to win out more or less and look at least competitive in its conference tournament to hold on to a hosting spot. I don't know that it is in that spot anymore, nor do I know if it's able to recover it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week, and whether it be UC Irvine hosting or the Big East getting 2 teams into the tournament, when you're in one of these non-traditional Power Four conferences, for better or worse, your leash is a lot shorter than someone who's in the SEC or the ACC or the Big 12. And we saw it last week. And UC Irvine is a team that, Similar to, I'd say, Texas, outside of, really similar to Texas, they hadn't had a dud weekend all season, outside of its series loss at Oregon State, I think in early April, but that wasn't really a dud weekend, at least for me. But this was their first stinker, and they got beat pretty badly against UC San Diego. They lost the first game 19-4, got shut out 4-0 in game two, and as a result of it, its RPI fell outside of the top 16. It's now at 18. And when it comes to hosting, I'm with you that right now they're probably on the outside looking in. And in terms of making that up, again, also just given the nature of the beast and playing in the Big West, it's going to be really tough to do, because their final two series at Cal State Bakersfield and against Cal State Fullerton, those two teams have RPIs of 257 and 137 respectively. So, I mean, from a tournament resume standpoint, and it stinks, there's really not a whole lot of upside here for Irvine in the remainder. Now, when it comes to being in good shape, UC Irvine is in very much good shape. They're a lot, they will be in the tournament. And at this point, they will probably be one of, if not the toughest two seed in the field of 64. I think if my reward for hosting and being a top 16 national seed was getting Irvine in my regional, I would be terrified. So, I mean, it's a team that in the grand scheme of things, I don't really view all that differently. But last weekend was certainly a tough hit and perhaps knocked it out of the hosting picture for good this season.
I think there is maybe one path back to the host line for UC Irvine, and that would be to go into the Big West tournament and defeat teams like UC Santa Barbara or Hawaii or Cal Poly. That, to me, could be the final push if some other things shake out the right way across the country. Perhaps UC Irvine could get back into the hosting picture. Let's talk bubble. UC Irvine on the hosting bubble. Let's talk college baseball bubble at large here. Kansas versus Cincinnati, Peter, might have been, I actually would say certainly was, the most impactful series maybe in the country this past week in terms of impacting the bubble and the postseason picture and where the balance of bids is going to go. Kansas obviously comfortably into the tournament, still is after this result, was swept by Cincinnati, which was at the time on the wrong side of the bubble. Now, I think that Kansas looks like more of a three seed, and Cincinnati also looks like more of a three seed. Probably just grew the list of bids going to the Big 12.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way in terms of, you know, this being the most impactful series or one of the most impactful series last weekend as far as a bubble standpoint goes. But Kansas, and just to hit on the Jayhawks really quick, knocked them out of the top 25. Obviously, as far as the tournament goes, they're probably in that weird gray area between one of the lower two seeds and a really strong three seed. But a team that's safely in the tournament nonetheless, they're still top 40 in RPI. Their metrics, relatively speaking, are kind of favorable. Their strength of schedule is just inside the top 100. Their non-conference strength of schedule is lacking. They do only have one quad one win. So I think for Kansas to sleep a little bit better at night, I think it'd be in their best interest to take care of business this week at Missouri and then hosting BYU. I think that's a good opportunity to flush the weekend that was. But anyways, to give Cincinnati the love it deserves, it was a team that heading into last week was kind of on our next four out bubble line, if you want to call it that. They were certainly on the outside looking in as it pertained to an at-large bid, but kind of lurking in the weeds, so to speak. And a series win at Kansas was really important for them to put some points on the board. And not only did they win the series, they swept. It was in rather convincing fashion. That middle game on Saturday was insane, 18-14 in 10 innings. I think there were like 30-something combined hits. Just a roller coaster of a game. But now as it stands, and I'm curious your take on it, Cincinnati's in for me as a three seed. And looking at it right now, they're 27-20 overall, 13-11 in the Big 12, 43rd in RPI, top 35 strength of schedule, and they've got 7 quad one wins. So, I mean, as far as an at-large bid is concerned, especially from a top or especially from a Power Four conference, I think the Bearcats are in a really, really, I don't want to say really good spot right now. That's tough to say, just given the volatility of everything this time of year. And then also their remaining schedule, which this week's really tough. They're at Oral Roberts tonight, at TCU this weekend. And then next week they're home against Indiana and Kansas State. So, I mean, they're not out of it yet, but I'd say right now they're certainly on the right side of the bubble and have every reason to feel pretty good heading into this week.
Yeah. 3 weeks out from Selection Monday, I would tell you right now that they're in. Do I think that there's a chance that that becomes not the case over the course of the next 2 weeks? I would say so. I mean, you just read off the schedule. You're talking about a series of pretty difficult games, including a couple quad one opportunities. Do I think that they stay in the tournament? Yeah, probably. I know I've heard some feedback from a couple of Big 12 coaches, and I thought that this was really interesting, that they thought Cincinnati was far better than the record indicated. And this was coming from coaches who were able to beat Cincinnati at some point this season. And they wondered, you know, how was it possible that they were what they were when we were able to beat them? Maybe we got away with one because this team is one of the best in our conference. If that's the case, and there are coaches who believe it, which is what I'm hearing, I think that Cincinnati is a team that probably belongs in the field of 64 and now has an opportunity to prove that, like you said, with a series against TCU and Kansas State, which is also on the bubble. Staying there, let's continue to talk about this. Notre Dame, in or out for you?
Oh, man. I would say at this point, this is actually funny because if you're listening to the podcast, you're going to probably hear Jacob and I's debate real time on our upcoming Field of 64 call. For me, they're maybe the last team out at this point, but certainly trending in the right direction. Who knows? Maybe you're listening to this podcast and also reading the article and Notre Dame's last team in, because it's certainly a debate worth having. They're fresh off a really impressive series win against Louisville, a ranked series win at that. They're now 26-19 overall. The ACC record has markedly improved. They're still three games below 500 at 12-15, but trending in the right direction. They're now top 50 in RPI and have a top 50 strength of schedule. They've got 10 quad one and quad two wins. It's a resume that's certainly worth debating. But I'd say for me, they're probably that last team or first team out, whatever you want to call it. The closest team that's not in the field to making the field, that's probably what they are to me at this point. What say you?
I say that they need to beat Miami to close out the regular season. You got to take two of three, and you certainly cannot lose your series against Bowling Green, which doesn't really do you any favors, but it certainly can hurt you. So for me, Notre Dame is on the wrong side of the bubble right now, maybe one of the first four out. I don't know where in that order they would stack up for me right now, but probably one of the first four out. And like I said, the difference will be, do you beat Miami? Do you take care of business against Bowling Green? And then what happens in the ACC tournament? Is it a one and done situation? Are you able to go there and steal a win or two? Depending on how that shakes out, I could see Notre Dame making a push to the right side of the bubble. For now, no. For now, out. Let's do another one. Mississippi State, yay or nay?
Whenever we've needed a new writer here at Baseball America, we've used Indeed. Indeed has helped keep us organized and on track and has provided a wide array of qualified candidates. When we need to hire, Indeed is our partner in finding qualified candidates quickly. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your jobs posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. That's one of the things I love about Indeed. Indeed allows us to not just get qualified candidates, but do it all within the Indeed website. It keeps it organized. I can reach out to people. I can send that follow-up message all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
With Amex Gold, you can make dining out before the big event a big event.
Hey, you made it. It's been so long.
And earn 4 times membership rewards points on purchases at restaurants up to $50,000 per year. And if you're running late, no problem.
Oh, we gotta go.
You get access to card member entrances at select venues, so you can make it in time to catch the big win. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Card member entrance access not limited to Amex Gold card. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
So part of our Field of 64 calls, and maybe we should just do it now and have our Field of 64 be like part two of the podcast, because this is a perfect segue into it. But part of our Field of 64, just like our top 25, but this one to a greater extent, is projecting and, you know, seeing how teams are going to do the rest of the way. Coming into last weekend, for a whole lot of reasons, both record-wise, resume-wise, and then also just what had happened within the program, of the firing of Chris Lemonis, we had Mississippi State pretty safely out of the Field of 64. But then they go 4-0 during the week. They run rule Memphis, which isn't really something to hang your hat on, no offense to Memphis, but then they sweep Kentucky in rather convincing fashion with a run rule win and then a comfy 6-1 win on Sunday. And all of a sudden, Mississippi State went from 7-14 in the SEC, kind of like dead in the water type territory, honestly, to now 10-14, 29-19 overall, top 35 RPI. They've got a top 12 strength of schedule. And I think that, you know, you hear us talk a lot about this magic number of 12 or 13 wins for SEC teams on the podcast. And what that's referring to is if you win 12 conference games at the SEC, in the SEC, that's kind of the benchmark that you have to get if you want to have a shot at an at-large bid. And then if you win 13, you're relatively safe, barring a handful of cases. So with 2 weekends left, Mississippi State has a rival series against Ole Miss. I don't foresee it getting swept. I don't foresee it winning that series. I think Ole Miss probably takes 2 of 3. But I do think Mississippi State tallies an SEC win, and an important one at that. And then next weekend, they go to the Missouri Tigers for its final SEC series of the season. And so, I mean, I think they get at least 2, perhaps 3 there. So, I mean, you're looking at, by the end of the regular season, a Mississippi State team that probably has at least 13 SEC wins on top of favorable metrics and metrics that the committee really puts a lot of weight towards, for better or worse. So I'd say Mississippi State's in for me.
Mississippi State in. I have nothing else to say. They're going to get to the win total that we've talked about a lot on this podcast. The metrics are favorable. Mississippi State on the right side of the bubble. Let's do one more here, Peter. I am looking at Xavier as a team that took a step back last week. RPI plummeted, RPI explosion from the low 20s to 44 right now. They lost to Miami, Ohio. They lost to Seton Hall. They ended up winning the Seton Hall series 2-1, but the damage was done. This team was in last week, now on the bubble. I will actually start with the yay or nay this time and say yay, still in, but one of the last 4 in for me. So Xavier on the barely right side of the bubble, hanging on by the skin of its teeth.
Very interesting. I thought your answer was going to be actually what mine was, which is on the wrong side of the bubble. As you said, that the first 2 games of its week last week, series win aside, I mean, the loss to Miami, Ohio, and then the loss to Seton Hall with the RPI of 190, that's, you know, it, as you said, the damage was done. They're now outside the top 40 as it pertains to RPI. But I think that they have the unique opportunity, and unique because, you know, in the Big East, it's, you know, I don't want to get into the Big East, but they have I'd say a pretty favorable schedule remaining, not in terms of who they play. At Creighton and at Penn State are 2 pretty difficult series, but favorable in terms of shoring up and cementing its resume as an at-large team, because I think if they even go 1-1 in those series, especially if they can go on the road and beat Creighton, I think that that would put them in pretty good standing. And I think with Xavier, at least heading into last week, and still are to an extent, they were this kind of underrated metric darling that was not necessarily an outlier, but kind of inside the top 20 or wherever it was. And it's non-conference strength of schedule is third. They're still in the top 50 in RPI. Debating them versus some of these other teams on the bubble is a really interesting one. But I think that if we were to put ourselves in the committee's shoes, we'd probably lean towards the team with the favorable metrics. So like Xavier versus Notre Dame at this point, it's probably Xavier. Xavier versus Virginia Tech, Xavier. And so I think Xavier versus Western Kentucky is a fascinating one, which we'll probably talk about off air. But yeah, I'd say right now it's certainly a lot more bubbly than it was last week, but on the right side of it.
Let's move on to our favorite segment of the show. Really your favorite segment. You have stolen this from me, my joy. Picks a click. Last week, yet again, you emerged victorious. You went with Michael DeMartini from Dayton. He went 2-for-8, not terribly impressive, but he did hit a triple. I picked Colin Yeaman from UC Irvine. He went 2-for-11 and did not have an extra base hit. So not exactly an impressive week from either side, but by the rules of the game, you did have the better week of the two of us. Again, you lead 3-1 in the second half. I won the first half 6-2, I believe. And now we are in the penultimate week of the regular season. We'll probably hit a little refresh button for the postseason as well. So stage two, looking hot for you. We're picking pitchers this week. Who do you have?
So first I'll say that I think you've mathematically clinched a regular season cumulative victory. So congrats to you, even with my win last week.
Thank you.
And who would have thought that Michael DeMartini's triple in game three of its series against Richmond would have been such a difference maker. But this week I'm going to go with Coastal Carolina right-hander Jacob Morrison, 6'8" righty, having a really, really impressive season for the Shots, has an ERA at exactly 2, 68 Ks to 14 walks in 67 and a third innings. He's anchored that Coastal Carolina rotation, which has just been outstanding. And I think that, you know, we gave it some love in recent weeks, but Coastal Carolina has long been known as this team that, you know, can really, really hit. But in the end, its lack of pitching will do it in the postseason and kind of lead to an early exit. This year, it's almost the opposite. Like, they have some guys who can swing it, led by Caden Bodine, potential first round pick. But the Shots 3.45 team ERA ranks fourth nationally. They have a number of guys, both in the rotation and the bullpen, that are exciting, both from just a performance standpoint and then also a draft perspective, especially looking at Cam Flukie, who's 26 eligible. But Morrison, Flukie, and Eckhoff, that's a really impressive rotation trio. And then you throw in bullpen pieces like Matt Potok, who's throwing the ball well, Dominic Carbone, who's a nightmare against lefties, and some of these other guys you've got sprinkled in. And this is a team who's pitching, you know, it's going to be able to keep it in most games, if not all games, going forward. And I think that it's one of the main reasons I kind of feel bullish on Coastal long-term, and is something that they lacked in years past as to why I didn't really feel too excited about him. So long-winded answer short, I picked Jacob Morrison, one, because he's a really good arm who's performing well, but I also wanted to give Coastal some love that they rightfully deserved.
I lied to you before the show, Peter. I did.
Uh-oh.
I told you that I was
going to pivot your pick.
I am. I told you that I was going to go with Anthony Ianson of LSU, and I wanted to. He was so good last week, and he's fun to watch. He's got an awesome curveball, and you and I have been talking about him since before the season even started, but I decided against it the last second. I'm going to go with a guy who we talked about on the pod. I need not explain him too much further, but I'm going with Brian Curley from the University of Georgia. He has been a stud this year, 51 2/3 innings. He struck out 61. He's walked only 18. He's got an ERA that just dipped below 3 last week after he threw 7 shutout innings against Missouri, now 2.96. a guy who has a 100 mile an hour fastball. He's got a big old slider. He's only 5'10". Bulldog mentality on the mound, big fiery guy. He's a super fun player to watch. I personally think that he should be, you know, somebody in the earlier round consideration than where we currently have him on our big board. You and I have talked about that. I love Brian Curley, and I haven't picked him. Nobody's picked him yet this year. So with 2 weeks left, I had to step up. You're welcome to Brian Curley. I had to pick him.
I like that pick. And as you said, one, he's performed really, really well this year. Dynamic righty with a plus fastball slider combo, mixes in a kind of a shorter bullet slider that's really effective on top of his upper 90s heater that's been up to 100 with a ton of life through the zone. And he's a guy that, you know, in just watching him, he kind of thrives under the bright lights and in tough environments. Like, he wants the ball in big games and when the lights are at their brightest. Like, he threw the ball well at Texas, struck out 9 across 5 innings. At Vanderbilt, struck out 8 across 6 innings, in which he allowed just 2 earned runs. And then this weekend at Alabama, that's going to be another really raucous, rowdy, and fun environment, kind of your classic rowdy SEC series. And I already know he's going to be chomping at the bit and wanting the baseball. And I heard an interview with him on Twitter that I found to be really, really interesting. And it's, you know, kind of how he gets that confidence and, you know, how he pitches with so much confidence, start in and start out. And he kind of, you know, emphasized the importance of visualization. I think he said, and I'm probably getting it wrong, and I'll have to find the actual interview on Twitter, but he said something along the lines of, you know, each start day he goes out to the mound and visualizes exactly what he's going to do, the successes that he's going to have throwing the ball well. And I think that there's a ton of power in that. I mean, we've seen it with Texas with, you know, even last week when Thomas Burns got into a tough spot and Coach Wiener went out and calmed him down. He gets out of a tough spot against A&M. And then they cut to it on the ESPN broadcast of earlier in that day with Burns on the mound with his eyes closed, just kind of very lightly going through the motions and visualizing the success he's going to have. So that was kind of an unnecessary tangent, but I'm with you that Brian Curley is a fun pitcher. He's a fun player. And a guy that you can feel really confident in handing the ball off to in big games.
All right, Peter, this is the big moment for you. I'm not going to help you this week. I will not stall this out. It is time for our final thoughts. Here we go. Final thoughts. Peter has been working on this all year for our loyal podcast listeners. This has been, we've been building up to this moment. This is the crescendo these last 2 weeks. Peter, hit us with your penultimate regular season final thought.
Hey, not to pat myself on the back, but my Northeastern one last week, though, was a little bit thanks to you because you gave me time to come up with one. My Northeastern one was decent. This week, I will say, kind of in the spirit of the top 25, both weekend, really just weekend and week out, but also in tough weeks when you kind of have this debate at the top, you could go a number of different ways. And that leads to fan interaction, good and bad on Twitter. I'll say that I'm a fan of all of it, even if it's bad, even if it's saying, you know, your rankings aren't great, this team should be here, you know, you're an idiot. Really not all that bad stuff in the grand scheme of things. But I'd say the overall theme is that I'm happy to see it because it means people care about college baseball. And I think that's what's so important. That's kind of why we do it in terms of growing the game, getting people to care about it, getting eyes on it. And I mean, I've seen that this year probably more than any other year. So I'd say my overall theme is, you know, as the regular season winds down, we get into the postseason. It's been really, really cool and fun to see people care so much about their team, so much about the game in general. And I think that breeds a really, really positive for the most part environment. And it's helped a whole lot, getting college baseball to the point where it is. So I'd say my overall theme there is, I guess, thank you to the fans of college baseball. And I think that we're in for a fun last month plus of the season.
Look at you. That was a great final thought. He came in and knew exactly what he wanted to say. You delivered it. That was excellent. I thought that was an excellent message. That's a tough act to follow. Mine is not as cool. I don't have Peter Wynn's final thoughts this week. My final thought is about the Miami Hurricanes. I just want to talk ball for a second.
Good one.
I just want to talk a little bit of ball. I mean, this is a team that has done an exceptional job over the course of the last month and change to get itself back into the picture for the postseason. I mean, we are talking about a group that looked completely out of it. And if we're going to be frank, maybe even like a team that was going to have a head coaching vacancy at the end of this year. JD Arteaga was not winning enough games to start ACC play. Since then, though, they've been perfect. Let's just go back to the start of April. They beat Pitt 2 games of 3. They beat Duke 2 games of 3. Swept Georgia Tech. Swept Boston College. And then most recently, they won 2 of 3. Or excuse me, just 2 of 2 due to a rain cancellation against NC State. Miami is now up to number 25 in RPI. They're 14-9 in the ACC, which is a game out of first place, and 29-18 overall. Not only does this look like a group that has a chance at the ACC and possibly also the ACC tournament, but, and this is my big final thought, a team that I think can sneak its way above the host line if it continues to play the way that it has. There could be hiccups along the way for other teams. All Miami has to do is continue to win to show well in the ACC tournament. And I think that there will be a Coral Gables regional come a month from now. That is my final thought.
So I'm happy you put that final cherry on top, because that's what I was going to pose to you and ask if Miami would be able to host. And you answered it for me, because I'm with you. I mean, I think that it's certainly a possibility that they can host. They go to UVA this week, and then they host Notre Dame, obviously two non-gimme series. But they've been playing some of, if not the best baseball of anyone in the ACC since in the month of April. And they've just blown through its opponents. And, you know, I'm not going to pick against Miami this week, and I don't really see any reason to pick against them the last couple of weeks. And I think that, you know, if they go on and win a couple more series and win a game or two in Charlotte, that this is probably a team that ends up hosting. That's a pretty dynamite hosting resume. Right now, they're comfortably a 2 seed, but they're top 25 in RPI. They've got a top 10 strength schedule. They've got 17 quad one and quad two wins. Like, it's a really dynamite resume. So I'm kind of curious to see what their final act is this regular season. And as they head into the postseason, I think that whether you're heading to Coral Gables to face a top 16 Miami, or, you know, you're hosting Miami as a really good 2 seed, like, it's a team that you're not going to want to look forward to playing. And I think that on both sides of the baseball, it's really, really clicking. So they've got it all going on. I'm excited to see how they close out the regular season.
You know who else has it all going on, Peter? We do at baseballamerica.com.
Head over
to the website to make sure that you're checking out all of the best content. You're covering all things baseball right now. We just dropped our top 100, or we're about to drop our top 100 on Wednesday, May 6th. New top 100 in-season update. I believe that's the first in-season update for us. We'll have a lot of content related to that, including some on the college side. If you're wondering which colleges are represented in the new Baseball America top 100 at the professional level, you'll be able to find that on the site on May 7th as well. We have daily college baseball coverage at this point in the season. Lots of things focused on the postseason and where teams are starting to shake out. So if you're trying to keep up with all things going on across the country and you're looking to get ready for the postseason, you can do that over at baseballamerica.com/college. For Peter Flaherty, my name is Jacob Rudner, and we will see you in week 14.
With Amex Gold, you can make dining out before the big event a big event.
Hey, you made it. It's been so long.
And earn 4 times membership rewards points on purchases at restaurants up to $50,000 per year. And if you're running late, no problem.
Oh, we gotta go.
You get access to card member entrances at select venues, so you can make it in time to catch the big win. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Card member entrance access not limited to Amex Gold Card. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.